the city at the confluence of goods moving from India and Central Asia up the river or across the desert, flourished for several centuries, even though the Seleucids established another capital in Syria, from which he could govern in his western lands. Some estimates propose that Seleucia on the Tigris attracted a population of several hundred thousand people. And this reminds us of our early discussions of the rise of cities in Mesopotamia. The first city, Uruk, which was established in the 4th millennium, was notable for its size, about 3.5 miles square, and its population, anywhere from 20 to 50,000 people. Urbanization was an important feature of Mesopotamian culture throughout its history. Other civilizations where we know agriculture appeared early, such as in Egypt, did not develop the same interest in city life until much later in their history. So the rise of the cities and what Mesopotamians did in their cities is really distinctive of their culture. Seleucid art and culture is not well understood in Mesopotamia, but any Greek influence was likely limited to the ruling elite and did not affect the majority of people living in the area. Seleucid rulers seem to have remained attentive to local gods, and we find inscriptions recording the repair of temples, so they behaved much as their predecessors had. The Parthians, a nomadic Persian people, began to challenge the Seleucids by the mid-3rd century BC and continued to exert pressure, pushing the borders of the Seleucid Empire further west. The Seleucids surrendered Babylonia, including Seleucia on the Tigris, in 129 BC to the Parthians, and afterwards the Seleucids were confined to the region of Syria. There, they encountered the Romans, who were reaching the height of their dominance in the Mediterranean. By 63 BC, the Roman general Pompey defeated the last of the Seleucid rulers in Syria. At the height of their power in the late 1st century BC, the Parthians, who governed from about 250 BC to AD 226, controlled lands that stretched from the Arabian Desert east to Pakistan. They were originally located in northern Iran, and they were skilled cavalrymen. The phrase, a Parthian shot, refers to their ability to turn around while their horses were galloping away and fire one more arrow at their enemies. The Parthian innovative use of cavalry allowed them to gain control of the Silk Road, and we have evidence that the Parthian king Mithridates II received a delegation from the Han dynasty in China. Although this speaks to exchange over a much larger region than we have normally incorporated in our study of Mesopotamian trade, long-distance trade has been a consistent subject in our discussions. Archaeological and written sources have testified to both state, whether it be city-state, regional state, or empire, and to private enterprise. In the 20th century BC, the Assyrian merchants of Karum Kanesh established an active exchange of goods between Babylonia and Anatolia. Textiles were the main commodity in the trade, woven by Babylonian women, then sold to Assyrian merchants, who loaded up large donkey caravans and made the long, dangerous journey to central Anatolia. There, they exchanged the woven goods for tin, which was necessary for bronze. Another metal, gold, was represented in the gift exchange of Near Eastern rulers in the Amarna era of the 14th century. The letters between the kings record an astonishing amount of luxury goods that were used to solidify negotiations between the great powers. And you'll recall that this gift exchange marked a period of unusual peace in our study of Mesopotamian history. The Parthian rulers, called the Arsacids after Arsaces, the first king, organized their empire very loosely and with some recognition of the many groups that they governed.